A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, your host Tim Stillman, looking ahead to this Sunday's Conti Cup final between Arsenal and Chelsea at Molineux. I have to be honest, initially I was fuming that this collides with the men's big game at Manchester City, but to be honest, not being able to watch that game is actually psychologically, I'm finding it as the days approach, a more helpful space to be in anyway. But obviously Arsenal have Chelsea in the Conti Cup final on Sunday. It feels, well, we'll talk about whether it's season defining or not, but it feels pretty seismic for Arsenal's season. And here with me to discuss that game and look ahead to it is The Athletic's Art Deroche. Art, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me. And to, if we want to mention more arsey stuff, I've been snowboarding this week, so my bum is actually quite sore from all the falls I've taken. But aside from that, all good.
Yeah, that's that. Well, yeah, it's going to feel a bit like snowboarding, I think, this weekend. It's going to be a bit volatile and roller coastery, I think. But Art, just a first, like, really kind of 1,000-foot question. How big does this game feel? Because I remember going into last season's Conti Cup final, I said, this is must win. We have to win this. And that to me felt like about giving momentum to the Jonas project. And you and I both spoke to him about that and the impact that had on subsequent games. This time it feels must win to me for quite different reasons. It feels like almost not like gaining momentum, but I don't want to say stopping a slide, but the way the season's gone, this is really the only tangible success Arsenal can get from this season. I detect a lot of kind of dread from the fan base about this game, and also a sense that this is the kind of the season, because after this, it'd be extraordinary if Arsenal finished anywhere other than third in the WSL. So how big and seismic does this game feel to you? And I guess the mood coming into it.
Yeah, I'd say I'm at a similar kind of perspective to you, where it does feel must win, but for very different reasons to last year. It, in my eyes, it's almost as if, okay, now this cup final is almost just, what is your season going to be kind of remembered for? And again, it's different to last year because we began this season with Jonas Odevall signing a new contract. So it's not like he's almost having to fight for his job at the end of the season, I'd say. But when you're looking at how the season has gone, Arsenal squad being made for the Champions League and them not being able to qualify for the group stages, it is massive that they come away with something tangible, as you mentioned, because even though they have proven that they can compete against the bigger teams like Manchester City and Chelsea, and we'd probably have to include Manchester United in that still, it is about the consistency, which I saw you ask Stionis about a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure we'll talk about more today. That is the big kind of the big reason why this is must win.
Yeah, that was literally going to be the next question I was going to ask you, because I asked Jonas, you know, in the wake of that recent Chelsea defeat, I asked him about how do you analyze like a one-off game versus the bigger picture. And he talked about how the team had been inconsistent this season. He said, we'd shown we're a good team in moments, but we haven't been able to show it game after game. And I think the crystallization of that, right, is whacking Chelsea 4-1 at the Emirates and then a week later going and losing at Tottenham. That to me seems to be the season in a bit of a nutshell. What do you think the kind of you referenced that? I think having a 25 player squad and not having Champions League football was obviously both a mental impact, but had an impact on like how the squad's been managed. But what do you see as the main reasons why Arsenal really just haven't been able to kick on at any point this season so far?
I feel like that's probably the biggest factor among a few, because there are a few areas that you were able to get, I guess, relationships built upon, like in midfield. So obviously for most of the season, it's been Volti, Pullover and Little. But even when Kyra Cooney-Cross got her opportunities alongside Pullover, they worked really well together. So that unit, you would say, has probably been the most consistent throughout the year. Other than that, the only one I can really kind of put my hand on is Lotta and Amanda in the middle of defence, which obviously has now kind of moved on to a new stage, which again, I'm sure we'll talk about.
I think it was very nice of Amanda to time her pregnancy for Leah Williamson's return. So yeah.
A lot of pre-planning. But I do feel like the good problem of having so many players probably did impact Arsenal adversely throughout the year, because they didn't have the opportunity to rotate properly with Champions League. And then you see even with players like Katrin Kuhl going on loan to Everton, Gio as well going out on loan, there were just players who weren't getting enough football. And then those who were sometimes coming off the bench like Stina, I think sometimes were maybe coming into things cold. And almost there was like having to shoehorn everyone in at times probably didn't help. So yeah, I think next season it's almost like a hard reset is needed. Not in terms of personnel, but just in terms of, okay, that's out of the way now. We know we've got this squad that's been built over the past 2 years, I'd say. Now kind of use this as the starting point.
Yeah. I don't think there'll be a lot of incomings this summer. I think like goalkeeper, left winger, I don't see an awful lot more than that, because I think we did so much activity so quickly. There has been a need to settle. But where do you stand, I guess, personally on the kind of, because on one hand, you could look at it and say this is all part of transition, and over time, the players will get used to being rotated. Like we see at Chelsea, for example, like Emma Hayes didn't do that immediately. That took some time to be able to go, I'm going to make three changes this week, two changes, you know, and really, really build that kind of flexibility. Or, you know, I think a lot of fans, and that's kind of a faith position, but I think a lot of fans, you know, are in the position of this just feels a bit messy and like we don't know what to do. Like, where do you stand on that? Like, I guess, is this going to course correct and perhaps do a bit of an Arteta where it does eventually all come together? Or do you think, because I think Jonas is a really good problem solver. I think he's shown that particularly at the end of last season when he had almost no options. At halftime against Villa on Sunday, I thought he made some really good, like, I feel like he's a good crisis manager, but I still think there's a question to be asked about, okay, you've got 25 players and you got 10 games over the next couple of months. What are you doing here? Like, do you feel that there will be a course correction?
Yeah, so when I spoke about, I guess, starting from a place where you know what the squad is for next year, having qualified for the Champions League most likely being the case, I think that's where maybe Jonas will get a better understanding of how he wants to use certain players within this squad. Because there have been moments this year where it has looked like, I'm not sure if it's him or the players, maybe they don't know what the plan is for that moment in time, where there's just been a bit too much hesitation, I'd say, rather than actually playing off instinct. And I think that mostly just comes down to there being so many variable options. So when you look at those winger positions, there are a lot of options, but they're all very different to each other. So even the way, I guess, Lacazette is used, when she's playing on the right, she's very different to how she's used off the left. And I think figuring that stuff out is going to be maybe frustrating. It has been frustrating to watch this year, because there have been those moments where it seemed a bit like, oh, what's going on? But when you have not just the summer to work on it, but this kind of second half of the season as well, we've seen different tweaks in an attacking sense. I think hopefully it should do a mirror of that, I guess, Arteta correction course. And I'd also say that it's not like Arsenal have been a million miles away from it this year. It's been a lot about those details they've just got wrong at the worst possible moments. Liverpool being one example on the opening day, Tottenham, as you mentioned, and now Chelsea as well, Chelsea away. So I think there should be enough there to kind of get back on course. But then also there's the question of, does everyone have that time to allow that to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think next season as well, so pivotal with Chelsea losing Emma Hayes. I have to say, I think on reflection, I think the squad's still slightly unbalanced in that there are loads of central midfielders. There are loads of number 10s, probably two like starting quality strikers. But because Lena Hurtig's been injured, we've been short a winger. Because Laura Wienreuter's been injured, been short of a fullback. So actually in wide positions, I think there's a shortage. And in central positions, I think there's been almost too much of an abundance. And I think that needs to sort itself out. I think some of the injury returns will kind of take care of that anyway. But I do feel that imbalance has cost us a little bit. Going to Sunday's game then, and you asked Jonas, even before the recent game against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, you were asking about this, something I've been interested in for years, like the dynamic of these Arsenal-Chelsea games has a real seesaw quality. And I find it really interesting how Arsenal-Man City and Man City-Chelsea, those games are always really, really tight. But there's something about Arsenal and Chelsea where they sometimes bring out both the best and worst in one another. And even before that Chelsea game, you asked Jonas about that, and that's exactly what happened in terms of, and Jonas spoke about it afterwards about how Chelsea, you know, the battering they got at the Emirates, they would be so keen to put that right. I think there's also this dynamic where one team does beat another and they go and do the same thing in the next game and the next team's ready for it. So I guess having been, let's put it bluntly, pretty pitiful in the recent game against Chelsea. In a weird way, does that give you comfort's the wrong word, but is there a part of you that's thinking maybe Chelsea will do the same thing and maybe this time we'll be a bit more ready for it, a bit like last year's Conti Cup final?
Yeah, so I think where that question came from was just looking at the trends over the, not just two seasons, but it, you can go back. I'm trying to think of an actual like time span to give.
Well, there was a 5-1 in Arsenal won 5-1 at King's Meadow in October 2018 and haven't won there since.
Yeah, so I think you can go back to then and say this has been a very erratic fixture. But also just the challenge of having to play them so quickly in succession was something that interested me because of the Manchester City games last season, where, again, I put this to Jonas and I'm not sure if he agreed or disagreed, but I felt he showed his hand in that first game. And in a way, that's kind of what happened with the league games against Chelsea, I'd say. So in my match piece after the most recent Chelsea game, the quotes that I included from Jonas was where he spoke about in those games, you basically have to learn as much as possible, not just from your own team, but the opposition. And I was thinking, well, if you're those two managers or head coaches, Jonas has probably got the most learning to do, which is probably a good thing. So I, again, hopeful is not the right word, but I do feel that it would go quite differently in the Conti Cup final. I don't see it being as, what's the right word?
One-sided.
Yeah. But I also, one thing that Emma Hayes brought up that I didn't really think about when we talk about this is how it actually felt like a home game for Chelsea. And the momentum they got from their start, their first minute, I'd say, was almost the complete reverse of what Arsenal had at the Emirates in December. So I don't know what Molyneux's going to look like in terms of the shades in the stands. But that'll be a really interesting side to it as well, because I think Selhurst Park last year, Chelsea started better, but then Arsenal were able to weather through that. So I think it could be quite different in terms of just how the emotional side of things play out as well.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog.
Yeah, definitely neutral venue, but I do think it's going to be more red than blue, but not sure about the ratios. And obviously, it's a ground that neither team really knows either. So, you know, it the noise might favour one team over the other, but the environment probably won't. I think you're right. I think that's another really kind of fascinating thing about this game. Let's go into kind of a little bit of the nuts and bolts of the game then, because one of the many things Arsenal really did not deal with in that game at Stamford Bridge is that Chelsea played like a bit of a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1, and they used Nushkin to basically take bodies away from Lauren James. They've played like that in every game since, in that system, that kind of 4-4-1-1 system. And they've got Ramirez back now. So I tend to think Nushkin still might start this, and they might view Ramirez as a good impact sub, particularly because this game might go 120 minutes. And they might think, well, we'd rather have Ramirez for the final 60 in the first 60. But I think they're going to play the same way. Something I've been thinking about in this, because it really foxed Arsenal. It really took players away from Lauren James. Do you think Jonas might consider a back three for this game, particularly with Leovolti unavailable, to stop that happening and to have that spare player, perhaps someone like Lotta Wubemoy, who can then really come away from that defensive line and try to deal with Lauren James?
Yeah, I think now you've said it, it makes a lot of sense in my brain, especially because one other part of Chelsea's dynamic that I would say has worked quite well in both games this season has been Kanarid off the right. I think Catley had real issues at Stamford Bridge, but also at the Emirates. Obviously, that's where Chelsea's goal came from. But in those first 20 minutes or so, there were a few other moments where she was just drifting inside. And at Stamford Bridge, there were actually moments where she looked a bit lost, Catley, and not through a fault of her own, but just because she was a left back having to look for a right winger coming inside and a right back coming up the channel at the same time. So another body in that back line could maybe just help free her, not just in attacking sense, but also defensively, and give her that security. So I believe that could be a decent way to go about it. And I guess we know from last year how effective that back three setup was for Arsenal under Jonas. And it just, I think, gives them a bit more flexibility as well when you've got, I'm not sure if McCabe will play right wing back this time around with Fox back, but it does give you a very good opportunity to change the picture. And yeah, I feel like when you're talking about central players like Marnham as well, she offers something very useful in that, in terms of being someone who's able to run in behind like Nuskin did at Stamford Bridge. So yeah, I think there are a lot of dynamics that back three could maybe help Arsenal with compared to, I guess we'd call it a 4-3-3 in a standard way that they've been playing for most of this season. So yeah, I think that could be a way to go about it. But then he's got options to change it as well if he needs to change the picture in a different way.
Yeah, I just kind of like the idea of maybe like Catley as the left centre back, McCabe left wing back, Fox right wing back. And then I think also that gives you the ability to slide into a back four if you want, and you can push McCabe on. And a little bit like Chelsea used to play a few years ago, they used to use Magda Eriksson like that. And I think also if Chelsea do spring a surprise and set up in a different way, it gives you the ability to change to a back four without burning a substitute early on. I'm not sure whether Jonas will do it. If he doesn't do it, there has to be a much better plan to deal with Lauren James. And I think if Nushkin was able to occupy our centre halves, then Ramirez is going to be a whole different kettle of fish as well. So I do wonder if he might have that up his sleeve, just because this really is like game for your life and maybe even game for your job territory. So I think that's one to keep an eye on. What about the midfield combination? Because again, Leovolti's not going to be available. He started Kim Little and Vic Pulova together in the double pivot. Those players have started together, but not alongside each other. Like one of them's been ahead of the other before, and they both very similar players. They both kind of prefer the right. Do you think Jonas will stick with that again?
Yeah, so if we're talking a back 3/5, the reason I've paused is just because I'm thinking about it from a physical standpoint. And I have no questions about their technical ability, being able to retain the ball. And to be fair to Pulova as well, she's actually really good defensively. I'm just wondering about numbers. That's what I'm wondering about. So I would maybe be tempted to maybe make it a 3 with Marnham and have her as the one that kind of shuttles through, I guess, all thirds of the pitch, really, and do all that running, because she can do it and she's still quality in the attacking third. But I know that's probably way off the mark. But yeah, I just worry about having only two players in there, especially if you've got James dropping in as she has been doing recently. That's my only worry with that.
Yeah, and because I guess you can look at it the other way, right? In terms of Chelsea basically playing 4-4-2. So I think they'll play Leupolz and Cuthbert together. And you're right, as much as Lauren James drops in, she's not really a third central midfielder. So you could look at it the other way and say, well, actually, if we do it better than we did it last time, like Arsenal can outnumber Chelsea in midfield and take control there. Like I say, in a way they couldn't do at Stamford Bridge. I think that's going to be really interesting, because clearly, whether it's the execution of the plan or the plan itself, something has to be different. That doesn't mean the formation has to be different. Doesn't even really mean the personnel has to be different, but something has to be very, very different in this game. And something he did at Stamford Bridge was he started Stina Blackstenius up front ahead of Alessia Russo, which in one respect was a surprise, because Stina tends to start against high lines, high line defences. But at the same time, she had just scored a hat-trick in her most recent game. And you can probably appreciate why a coach might say, you scored a hat-trick, you keep your place kind of thing. It's certainly, I mean, Russo starts most games, but I mean, could Russo be an option as number 10? Like, do you see it as, you know, how do you see that centre? Because you're talking about Frieda there and she, you know, and her playing in that number 10. Is there a world for you where Russo plays number 10? Could you see a world where it's 3-5-2 and Stina and Russo play together? How do you see that kind of centre forward number 10 relationship in this game?
Yeah, so as I've been kind of, I guess, going up the pitch, the idea that's come to my head is Frieda in that 10 with Stina and Russo as the two central strikers. One, because you've kind of got Stina naturally pull into that right channel. Whether she's going out there to cut a ball back across the box or shoot, she's very good at that. So I like her being able to stretch teams from that position. But also something, if you're using wingbacks, for instance, one thing that Jonas has been talking about quite recently is Russo's ability at the back post. And she's had chances there. She just hasn't really converted properly. So I think if you're looking at that 3/5 at the back, having an option to stretch down that right channel could help. But then also, if you're looking to get balls in early, having someone who attacks that back post like Russo does would probably be helpful as well. So I'd probably envisage it as Frieda in a 10 with Russo left and Blackstenius right.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you say that. That was actually kind of going to be around my next question, is what to do with the wide positions. I think we all know Beth Mead's going to start. Caitlin, I think, maybe for reasons we touched on, probably just a bit overplayed this season because Lena Hurtig's not been available. But you talked about Russo there on the back post for that Villa game in the Conti Cup. But also you look at the Villa game in the WSL where Lotta's goal comes from. It comes from Russo peeling off to the left and putting a really good cross in as well. And in fact, she put one in before that for someone else. I think it was Stina. She actually put a really good cross in for Stina and she headed it straight at the goalkeeper. So I do think that, I always think with Jonas's lineups, I think I can tell, but I always think there might just be one surprise or one thing that makes you go, ooh. And I really wonder if Russo playing on the left might be it. In fact, I've really got a feeling it might. And I was going to ask you about that, you know, maybe throw that in as a wild card or between Lacasse and Ford, because Chloe Lacasse played against Aston Villa. I thought she played pretty well, but at the same time, I don't think she did an awful lot more than Caitlin usually produces in that position. So are you saying Russo left, or do you think Caitlin will still get the nod?
So with all this talk, I actually somehow forgot about Beth, which is really, really bad. So yeah, with that in mind, I would probably go with Russo over Ford. And if it means Russo going out to left, it means that with Stina and Beth involved, I just feel like on one side you have pretty direct threat. You need to balance that a little bit on the other side. Obviously, we know Caitlin Ford is very direct in the way she plays. So having someone who can maybe not be, I guess, the initial target of the threat, but someone who can maybe just be like a little sucker punch, if that makes sense, to bring something a little bit different to that front line. So you're not attacking the same way all the time. I think that could be quite helpful. And also allows you to maybe be a bit more considered in what you're doing, especially if you have Little and Pullova kind of buzzing around as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think if you've got Russo, like she might come inside a little bit and, you know, almost make that kind of box shape, actually, if you've got Little and Pullova. And that's something we saw, you know, with the back three, even if he doesn't use the back three, like more of that box shape where if you have like Little and Pullova at the base of it, and then you kind of have Frieda maybe wandering off to the right and Russo wandering off to the left a little bit. I could definitely see that, particularly if Chelsea are going to play two central midfielders. That's a chance to really swarm it and kind of have four players in that area. I actually really like the idea of that. I've really talked myself into that. Maybe Jonas is listening to this and that's what ends up happening. But because like Arsenal have to do something different. They have to do something different in this game. And I've had a feeling about Russo playing on the left in this game, because we've seen in the Conte Cup group stages, because there isn't really another left winger. Well, there is in Katie, but she has to play one of the fullback positions. Like, we've seen different players play out there. And I mean, it hasn't really worked. Like Viv playing out there against Spurs, that looked very, very awkward to me. But Russo against Villa kind of did. And I could particularly, because at the end of last season as well, Arsenal lost Leovolti. So they didn't have that like dedicated defensive midfielder, and they moved more to that box shape. And yeah. I think I could see that happening. I think we've cracked this game, Art. I think like the head analyst, his name's gone out of my head, went to Oxford United this week. You know, there's an opening there, and I think maybe we've talked ourselves into a job.
To be fair, obviously the press conference room at Colney is in that kind of area for the off-pitch team, so who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we just like slide into the office and just refuse to leave and give Jonas the blueprint for the game. But yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating game, and you know, I really do think there's going to be one or both managers will pull some kind of surprise. And yeah, I think I know what my predicted lineup for this game is going to be now. But that was as ever really, really interesting. Really, really enjoyed kind of talking that through. It's kind of made me feel a little bit better about the game somehow. So thanks so much for joining us, particularly because, well, as you referenced, you've been away this week because you're actually on leave at the moment. So I've yanked you from your holiday to be on this podcast. So thanks so much for joining us again.
It's all good. No problem. And yeah, I think I wasn't really knowing how to think about the game this weekend. I haven't thought about football for most of the week, but I think this has helped me prepare as well for what we might see. A lot of shifting movements and stuff like that, potentially. But yeah, thanks for having me.
My absolute pleasure as always. And for those of you who haven't seen, we've got an interview with Beth Mead on the site as well, looking ahead to the game this weekend. And obviously we'll have all the usual coverage of the game, match preview, match report, tactical kind of deconstruction of the game on Monday. We'll have Jonas Idabal's press conference word for word after the game. So all of the coverage you'll need on Arse Blog News, as well as Art's coverage on The Athletic as well, which I very much recommend and point you towards. And we'll come back with another podcast probably during the April international break. I'm really keen to put something together about with Amanda Illestet's pregnancy. I'd really like to do a podcast about how clubs look after players during pregnancy. So trying to line up some guests for that. But so we'll probably do something maybe on that. Maybe it'll have to wait a couple of weeks, but definitely a plan we have on the pipeline. But otherwise we will do another podcast during the April international break, picking over the bones, the ramifications, the glory, delete as appropriate, of Sunday in the Conte Cup final. But thanks so much for joining us. Leave us a review on wherever you get your podcasts and make clear it's the Arsenal Women Arsecast that you're reviewing. And thank you so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.